Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
That's a good one. I'm so glad that we're talking about positive stuff. Hello, welcome to episode 67. Oh my goodness, we are plowing through the episodes here at Indigenous Vision Podcast. My name is Melissa. Welcome to another show. I'm here with Suta again.
Thank you, Melissa. And it's no surprise. Anybody who knows me, once you get me talking on any of these subjects we're talking about, yeah, we're going to need 67 episodes.
Right.
I love you, Melissa, for putting these all together for us.
I could do this every single day and just hit the record button and just see where it goes, depending on my mood as well. Like if you go through our episodes, like I am all over the darn place, but that's okay.
Yeah, we do give a pretty raw Indigenous experience sometimes.
Yeah. So we're here to talk about all of the great things that have been happening. I was kind of bedridden for like 12 hours the other day. So I used that as an opportunity to catch up on some like watching of TV shows, because I very rarely sit down and actually watch stuff. It's very hard for me. I watch like 15 minutes here and there on YouTube because I pretty much have ADD, I'm sure, or ADHD. So to sit down and watch a movie and like a series is huge. So I watched Prey and it was so phenomenal, Suta. You and everybody else on the internet who were chiming in and giving it praise, I'm totally there with you. What are your thoughts on Prey? Because when I was watching it, I thought about you a lot. You and the dog walking on a hill. I was like, oh my gosh, that could totally be Suta.
Yes, I loved it. I watched it twice, and my son watched it twice with me. And yeah, I felt that part because dogs are our best friends in a different way as Indigenous people than European descent people. I think because, I don't know, they've just been part of our family for so long and part of our working family unit. So they had jobs, they had purpose, they had place and a lot of value instead of just kind of what we see pets as today. And I think it's really cool that we're in an organization and we're so lucky to be working the projects we are. And if you want to contribute to actual res dogs working and helping protect the environment, Indigenous Vision has a really awesome program with great partners, the Blackfeet Environmental and Fish and Wildlife Offices and Working Dogs for Conservation. And we're getting res dogs out there and training them how to find environmental contaminants and heavy metals and animal diseases like brucellosis and scarpie and CWD now. And so we're going to be testing that in the field for the first time. And I just felt so proud watching this dog work and then hearing afterwards, like, I feel like the dog is the star of the show. I love the movie. I love the whole setting and everything Predator, but the dog just kind of stole the whole show for me because I didn't know and nobody knew, because the article didn't come out until after it was released, but the dog is an animal rescue dog and they got him from the rescue shelter and they were really nervous about training him for the movie, or her. I guess she was a hot mess. They described her as a hot mess and she just did a beautiful job. Like you couldn't ever tell. And that's the same concept that these Working Dogs for Conservation are doing. Is Working Dogs for Conservation specifically goes to animal shelters on the res to find like the most aggressive, unworkable, mean, you know, barking, antsy, energetic dogs that they could possibly find, the ones that nobody wants. And they take these dogs and they train them on scent discrimination and detection and send them off into the world. And the very first, our partners, Working Dogs for Conservation, one of their very first working dogs was a dog named Ruger, who was trained to find heavy metal ammunitions and weapons and gunpowder type stuff. And he ended up going to a game preserve in Zimbabwe and catching hundreds of poachers, confiscating thousands of bullets and hundreds of guns. And that's the power of a res dog. I'm just a fan.
Yeah, huge fan of dogs and res dogs. I know that they have like this special resiliency as well. And seeing that dog in that movie, I thought to myself, if this movie goes to hell, if all else, I just want the dog to make it. If everybody else dies, if it's a nuclear apocalyptic, you know, collapse, please let the dog make it. And I had to rewatch it twice because, first of all, it instilled so much Indigenous pride. I thought I was dreaming. I'm like, is this real? Did they really do that? So I watched it again and I was like, yeah, they really did do that. We have an Indigenous cast and a female lead who wins. I mean, spoiler alert, if you've never seen it, I'll put the alert on the text for this. But yeah, she definitely holds it down. And I was almost speechless at the end. I thought, wow, here we are in 2022. We have a major franchise movie of the Predator series. And here we are representing Indigenous folks in a proper way. I mean, obviously we can't be perfect with our representations of that time period, but it got everything that needed to be in there in that amount of time, I think. And it was almost perfectly done. What do you think about that?
It was the closest we could get to by us instead of about us, I feel like. And that's a huge deal. And I think it goes to show the success that happens when you put us in the driver's seat and let us control the speed and the direction, because this is Hulu's biggest release of the year, I think, is what I saw. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's
the of all time, Suta. It's their biggest release of all time.
That makes me so proud.
When I was reading that, I was like, are you kidding me? So many people have watched this. That's the thing. So many people are now in tune with these actors. They're aware that we exist and that we're capable of actually being on screen. We exist. We're here. I mean, that's enormous for Hulu to have the hugest release ever was Prey.
Thank you, Hulu. That's funny, though. The meme I saw when I woke up this morning was a tweet shared by somebody that said, Prey is so cool. I wish Indians were real.
Oh, man, there's so many memes now. I love the one where there's like a guy sitting in the grass with the same black makeup on his face. And he's just sitting there like, I'm in Prey. Like, you know, there's just so much pride going around. Then I saw you share that one of best supporting actor going to Sonny the dog. Absolutely fantastic. It's a classic. It's an instant classic now.
It is. And I'm glad there's rumors and they're setting up for a part two.
Right. I've never really watched a Predator movie. I know that in 87, the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I just know that Predator was like a see-through creature. That was the only thing that I like got. I was like, I just know that this is like an alien predator that can go see-through and transparent. And it was so insane to see the bear scene of like them holding up that huge massive bear and being covered in blood and just like, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. It was just, it's such a great movie. I mean, it's nonstop. I truly didn't know what was going to happen. And I was on the edge of my seat the whole time and I was excited and I was filled with pride. And it was just like so many emotions. Films don't do that to me anymore.
They don't really. And that has to be one of the best scenes is the river fight scene and just watching that power happen between the two species and her perspective. And that's exactly like, it's very, very cool when Indigenous people are at the steering wheel, because I think that's the most Indigenous Native person thing to do is actually run for safety of a beaver dam.
That's a good idea. I was like, whoa, go girl. That's something I'll keep in mind.
Yes, I know. Cause where are you going? But yeah, beaver dams are so beautifully constructed. And I thought it was just the perfect place to hide. And then when it got pushed in and I've seen on like National Geographic documentaries where bears will try to go bounce in the top of a lodge, but they're not successful. So it was really cool to watch it break and see the room inside there. And I will probably watch it again.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it like regularly just as a comfort film when kind I'm like feeling Grease. Low right yeah.
Grease and Romy and Michelle, but I want to see it in theaters. I want to see it. So if like little Roxy theaters here and there start picking it up, I'd even go there. And
that's what people are saying, like this was big enough to be in a theater. And I often wonder, I was thinking about like, would as many people have seen it if it was in the theater? Maybe. It could have been both Hulu and the theater. Who knows? Maybe it's going to be one of those classics that does get the theater treatment or like a special drive-in screening here and there because it's so epic. I could totally see that happening.
Right.
I love that you brought up Grease. Because yeah, on like, we're talking about good things this episode because we get kind of heavy, you know, like our reality is a lot. And I think it's worth mentioning that Lightning Cloud have celebrated their 1 year of Bear Grease, which is their adaptation of the Grease story. So that's cool.
Yes. If you can book Lightning Cloud and the Bear Grease show, definitely do it. I tried to get them here in Missoula for Kiayo, but I just couldn't. And that's, you know, I would love to see Crystal Lightning as Olivia Newton-John, Sandy.
Heck yeah. They did pass through Vegas and I missed it, unfortunately, but I'm hoping it does become a bigger production and maybe even gets a series or something or gets a recording or a special treatment like that where it actually goes down on, you know, maybe film or someone gets involved like that. But I thought that was something worth mentioning in our good news podcast today.
Absolutely. And Crystal Lightning and Henry are such a power couple. Anything they do, they put their whole heart into it and they're awesome to work with.
Heck yeah. Have you been watching Reservation Dogs? Season 2 is officially rolled out. I watched the 3 episodes again when I was bedridden with a tummy ache. Pretty good stuff again. I was like, here we go again.
I know. I just love all of the exposure and all of the, it makes me feel like I'm seen and part of this society. And like one of the 1491 comedians said, it is, we didn't get this when we were growing up. We were so other and not included. There was nobody on the screen that looked like us. There was nobody in entertainment that looked like us. I mean, Jennifer Lopez gets a little close to me, but you know, just kidding. But yeah, there's no one. We had no representation. And now our kids are growing up with it like it's normal.
Right.
And there's, you know, Reservation Dogs is a little bit too old for my son, but I have it on and then I'll cover his eyes and close his ears because they drop a lot of cuss words in there. But I think he likes seeing people with braids on we have braids, he has braids. And
being themselves, their raw, authentic selves. Like that's really how a lot of us are sometimes, especially on the res.
Yeah, it is a little like it's called code switching, right? Where we have to be more prim and proper and present ourselves in a different way to be accepted in beyond the border towns of our communities. And so that's really cool to show people who we are on the outside. And
I also love how there's different generations of Indigenous actors included. I mean, Gary Farmer, we've seen him in, you know, films over the throughout time, obviously. And Wes Studi, of course, you know, who's been in a couple of legendary films, but it's good to see them as just like regular native older guys. That's what I love the most about it. And I laughed pretty hard at that river scene. I'm not going to give too much away, but I was laughing hard. I was like, wow, that is totally weird uncle vibes.
It is totally. I love the river scene in that one. And, you know, Gary Farmer, he reminds me of my dad, and my dad is actually, he drives around on a lawnmower. So
talking smack to everybody,
talking smack and praying to the spirits and, you know, dropping tobacco at a
heckling everybody. Yeah. Love it.
Yes. But yeah, we live across a big field and he would go back and forth.
Another Hulu performance. Thank you to Hulu for doing that. I know there's lots of controversy around Hulu. There's different, I don't know. I'm not going to get into it, but Hulu is really giving us the platform right now that we absolutely need and deserve. So I'm really grateful for that. Super affordable too.
Right. What's up, Netflix and Prime?
And another win I wanted to share with you is the July 22 issue of National Geographic features an Indigenous woman. I'm going to share the link with you so you can actually see it. It's a big deal. Gosh, these ads.
Wow. She is so beautiful.
Yeah. Let me just pull this up so I can.
I'm so proud of our representation right now. This is the same article that Indigenous Vision has work featured in.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't see it either. It's a big deal though. I mean, North America's Native Nations Reassert Their Sovereignty is the title, and it features Quanah Chasing Horse on the cover of National Geographic. And what is this article about? Because I can't read it.
Well, the whole article features different nations in different parts of the country, and it talks about our sovereignty. And Indigenous Vision was actually, we got a call out of the blue, and it was one of those kind of cool calls of, hello, is this Sauta calling? And I was like, Sauta, yes. And and they're like, hi, this is so-and-so with National Geographic. And I'm like, oh, let me sit down for this one. And I sat down, and it turns out that one of my elders from my community and knowledge keepers recommended that they call me because of the work we do with maps in our community and how I'm trying to adjust the narrative of our culture and our history going beyond the reservation lines. Because we have generations of kids right now who don't think our places go that far, right? They're confined within the reservation. It's been a successful system of oppression. So our project is working to get our stories outside these borders. And because of that, this elder knowledge keeper got a call from National Geographic. And instead of him doing the work, he said, why don't you give Sauta Calling Last a call? And we got the call, and I got to look at their maps, and I got to look at their information and their wording, like making sure they spelled our tribal names right. And the coverage of their map, I was able to extend it and let them know that the area that they were previously using was more reflective of like band memories. So our Confederacy is made up of four nations and multiple bands, and each band has their own memory of the land, right? And so that shortens our territory if you just go by one person's memory or one clan band's memory. But if you combine all of those, then we span as nations, the two countries, the three provinces and the four states. And that's how far we go. And when we're putting that on paper and we're talking about who we are and where we come from and where we sit, I think it should be inclusive of all of that territory.
It's so beautiful. I hope I really see an actual physical copy of this on my outing today at the shopping centers, because I'm definitely going to buy it. I mean, that's pretty historical to see in 2022, an Indigenous supermodel on the cover of National Geographic, reasserting our sovereignty and being like, yes, we are here.
It's beautiful. And in the plains and the buffalo section, if you look down underneath that map, you'll see Indigenous Vision.
I'll buy two. Maybe I'll buy three and just mail you one for like keepsake and then one for actually reading. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
It's been a dream of mine to work with National Geographic. Like, I'm trying to, you know, very slow because I've got 10 million projects, but the Blackfoot Barbie, I wanted her to be the history chaser. And
oh my gosh, that's a great idea.
So National Geographic, that's me.
Hit up Sauta Calling Last, aka the Blackfoot Barbie. I have one more story to share. It's pretty exciting. We have the first Indigenous woman heading to space.
No way.
I just shared the article. Indian Country Today shared this yesterday, actually. Her name is Nicole Annapuman, and she'll be making history as the first Native woman to fly into space this fall. She's enrolled in a Northern Californian tribe, the Round Valley Indian Tribe. I'm going to try not to butcher this name, Wallaki tribe.
Wallaki. Oh, I'd have to see the spelling. Amazing. So she's the first Indigenous woman going up in contemporary history. We've historically have had people
right. In
intermarriages going back and forth for a long time.
I would love to go and look for a partner in space because I'm just feeling not to diss any of the guys on this planet, but the bar's kind of low down here.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me. Earth boys aren't for me, maybe. Oh my gosh.
No, the Blackfoot people have so many stories about star people and intermarriages and just, you know, the drama that can happen between a union happening between two different worlds. And
wow. It's exciting.
It's so exciting. And so ever since I was little, I've always had I have a star in the sky. That's just the most beautiful star ever. And I loved this star before I heard about our star stories. I knew we were star people, but after I heard about the story, I checked myself. I'm like, okay, I can't think that this star is that pretty or it's going to come get me.
Right. I love those stories too. So Nicole, is heading up into space to the International Space Station September 29. And guess what? She's leading the whole thing. She's got a crew of five and she is in charge. I don't know. I've never experienced this many Indigenous wins in my lifetime. And guess what? It's all female.
It's what? So unreal. She's my Shiro. I have so many Shiros this week and they're all so inspiring. And I hope this is just the beginning of the trend. And then all of a sudden we're just normal.
Like, this. Yeah. Like Indigenous women winning is normal.
Yes. I'm going to cry.
So I'm going to share as much as I can in the show descriptions, but thank you for joining us on this extremely positive episode of Indigenous Vision Podcast, which is also female led and produced 100%. Very proud of this, very proud of everybody. And go watch these shows and support these platforms if you haven't yet. I mean, you're going to love Prey. You're going to love Reservation Dogs if you've never seen it. And go pick up that National Geographic, share everything that you can. Just lift us up because we are here and we're not going anywhere. Thank you so much for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. You can find out more about us on our official website, including how to contact us, make a donation, or play back any of our music radio shows or this podcast. Don't forget to share with your friends and write a review if you've got time. We totally appreciate you sharing your time with us.